In the words of Edward Everett Hales, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Edward Everett Hale, a Unitarian clergyman, said these words, and I'm learning to embrace them. I use them as a mantra for the way I intend to live my life. These words are the roadmap for me to live my life beyond categorical thinking. Those terms that tend to box people like me into a category that is devalued. I will tell you a little bit about me. I'm an African American. You see that, don't you? I am female. I was born in a rural southern town. I consider myself to be an adherent of Unitarian Universalist principles and a practitioner of Soka Gakkai International Nichiren Deshonin Buddhism. I had two parents who were married to each other for 50 years and 1 month. I have a host of siblings. I had a husband for 28 and a half years, and before his death, we had two children together. I am grandmother to two grandsons. I am a volunteer beyond categorical thinking facilitator. We had a discussion here yesterday with some of you. We talked about differences and how to prepare a space for something new, someone new, taking into consideration that this something new could look a whole lot different from this room. I will tell you, I chose early in my life to work to make a difference in the world. Just because I experienced negative things, I kept my heart open to make sure that the contribution I make to the world reflects the good in the world. At about 8 years old, I started looking around in my environment, and I saw signs on the walls. Perhaps you have seen in your lifetime those same signs, those signs that separate us. And in my little town, those signs on the wall read, "Whites only," or "Coloreds only." Those words closed the door to togetherness and forever forbid us to be our greatest human selves. Those signs were on the doctor's office door, the courthouse door. They were on restaurants, at the bus station, at the laundromat. And I tell you, it was amazing to see two separate doors for two races of people to enter the same establishment. You see, the front door had the sign that says, "White only." The back door or the side door said, "Coloreds only." Because there were dangers for ever stepping across those lines, my parents were diligent about keeping their children out of harm's way. We only went through those doors that said "colored only." We attended schools just for the people of our race. There were not many forays beyond that. We lived on Grandpapa and Grandmama's land alongside other family members and other folks whose families owned the land on which they lived. We were all of African descent. I tell you this story because these conditions caused a yearning inside of me to help make a difference in my own town. You see, news stories were continually showing pictures of harmful things done to people who wanted equality, civil rights. There were vicious dogs turned loose on those people. There were fierce water hoses turned on them as well. There were beatings, lynchings, harsh names called. I thought it was time, at 8 years old, to do something about this. Now, at 8 years old, didn't you think that too? You could resolve any challenge that faced you, and especially if adults didn't seem to know how to do that. Well, at eight, nobody asked me to resolve this challenge, and the need for it, for me to come for it, subsided. But later on in life, as I matured to high school years, there was a form sent home to all kids by teachers and the principal. Those forms, we had to give them to our parents and ask them to fill them in and designate what school we would attend the next year. You see, integration was taking place. Those man writings on the walls were starting to come down, and something new was beginning to fill in that space. My junior year in high school was that year. I took that form that was given to me. I read it. I added my name to it. And then I signed the name of my parents. I turned it in too. And that was my attempt to help make a difference. I thought since the door had been opened, now it was time for somebody to walk through, take the action that was required now. I walked through, and that year, just five other black kids and one black teacher helped to open the way for change to take place, something new to take place. It wasn't a terrible year, but I will tell you, there were opportunities for some negativity to come out. There was a time when I thought that my mission was to be something grand. And I said, I know that there is something that I can do, at least one something. But as I mature through life, I find there is a continuous succession of one things I can do. And I try to step up to the plate. As my parents tried to keep their kids out of harm's way, they did not force us not to be brave. You see, they thought we needed to also be available to make a difference in the world. In my small town, that knock came at the door for integration. The door gradually opened. And that door opened the way for us to express our humanity in a different way, in a way that's caring, in a way that brings peace, in a way that allows each of us to bring forth the great things that are within us. And it is when we share those things that we give the best to the world. There was a friend not too many days ago. He was driving down the road, actually it was last weekend, when the person who was taking me to the airport said, "I listened to your presentation, and don't you think you could have hated those people?" And I said, "No." But since he was driving, he couldn't get a real firm look at me, but he snatched a look and said, "Really now, you didn't hate him?" And for a few seconds after that expression of hateness, if that's a word, I thought I had to search myself to find where that hate could be, hiding in one of those boxes of mine, those hate boxes. We all have one, don't we? One or two, maybe three. And I can tell you, as I told him, I really did not find a space for hate there, because what I wanted to do was live my life differently. I want to contribute to the good in the world with the life that I lead. I must work to remove the placards from the walls that hate built and nurtures. I work to see the opportunities for new messages to grow from the clear space left behind by hate. It has a power to spread the desire for the surrounding walls mired by residue to be cleansed. This is how I intend to live an authentic and honorable life beyond categorical thinking. The Flip This House reality TV show comes to mind as an example of how a rundown home can be stripped of its useless pieces and rebuilt into a stately manner. This is the way I want to build my life. I want to represent a steady contribution to the greater good. I want my actions to produce opportunities that stem the growth and root out discrimination, oppression, intolerance, lack of respect for others, and the like. I want to stimulate the abundant growth of all the ingredients that produce the greatest representation of humankind. You might say these words I have shared outline a tall order and never will be fully accomplished. But an old Chinese proverb states, if you want to correct the world, you must first correct the state. And if you want to correct the state, you must first correct the family. And if you want to correct the family, you must first correct yourself. Working at self-correction is of the first and perhaps only importance. By making one's own attitude correct, great chances of change in others' attitudes are made possible. And therefore, I remember too the words again of Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do.
I bid you greetings from Alabama. home of the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Auburn Tigers. And I did root for Ohio yesterday. Land of rockets and schoolhouse doors, land of monuments and the former Judge Roy Moore. I'd like to thank your search committee for making this a wonderful weekend. They have worked so hard. They continue to work so hard. And I would bid you to hug a search committee member, buy them a cup of coffee, anything you can to show your appreciation for the hard work they do and the sacrifices they are making. I have two mommies, she proudly exclaimed. In that resounding voice that only a toddler can muster, the kind of voice that demands attention and seems to have a permanently broken volume control. And it was there, standing in the grocery checkout line early on a Saturday morning, that my then two-year-old daughter, Adeline, had once again decided that the friendly cashier, who innocently asked how old she was, really wanted to know if she had a mommy and a daddy. This had played out several times over the preceding weeks in the bank line, the shoe store, the doctor's office. Adeline seemed to be wholly possessed by this particular fact of her life, and she felt inclined to share this news with anyone, everyone, who dared within 30 or so feet. And as every time before, the scene played out much like a scripted play. The cashier's smile skewed a bit. She looked at me, searching, and with confusion written all over her face, she said, "What did you say, honey?" And like every time before, I quickly jumped in. "Oh, you know, toddlers, who can understand what they say? I don't understand her half the time. Wow, what an amazingly beautiful ring you have." Only this time was different. This time, my precious daughter sat in the cart in front of me at eye level. And this time, I couldn't help but catch her gaze and see the confusion and the shame start to take root. This time, I felt the anguish of a parent who had just taught their child a lesson that I instantly wished I could take back. In that moment of rapid diversion, the verbal sleight of hand, the redirection of a potentially uncomfortable situation, I had taught my daughter to be ashamed of our family. I had taught her fear. I had taught her the beginning steps of a dance that I swore to protect her from. I had made a quick decision to neatly pack up the moment in a box, to tie it with a pretty ribbon, one that made my existence as both a lesbian and a mother easier for the world to handle, or better yet, just ignore. Now, from the earliest of ages, we are taught to put things into categories. Any Sesame Street fan or parent of a Sesame Street fan probably knows the famous song, "One of these things is not like the other. One of these things just does not belong." At 1 year old, children are able to distinguish difference. And these categories provide our lives with order and structure, understanding, and even comfort. They let us know where things or people belong. I know I have, and as I imagine you have too, spent a great deal of time thinking about where I belong in this world. Yesterday, we encouraged you to think about who belongs here with you, in this community, in this pulpit. My hope is that you have started a conversation, a place where you can unpack your boxes to see what is held and what may be hiding inside of them. Some of you got to know me yesterday, but for those who didn't, a little bit about me. I grew up in Alabama, the first grandchild in a very large, very proper Southern family. I was brought up to be attentive to all the best Southern graces, and I can still set a formal table with my eyes closed. I attended college, I was active in my community, and I performed in voice, theater, and concert symphony. I was the apple of my family's eye. And I sat on a pedestal that was pretty high and grounded in my ability to do no wrong and, for God's sake, do not embarrass the family. Needless to say, my fall from that pedestal was a quick but long descent. I was 22 years old when I came out as a lesbian and gay rights activist on CNN. Yeah. You heard it. CNN, your source for up-to-the-minute news. I'll admit, my decision to give an interview to the local TV station at the annual Gay Pride Festival in Birmingham, not one of my brightest choices. But I had no way of knowing that CNN would pick up the local feed or that an aunt some three times removed would happen to be watching and call my very conservative grandmother. The fallout was less than pretty. My mother had known my secret for many years, and she really was only concerned with my happiness and well-being. I wish I could say the same for the rest of my family, who for nearly 12 years felt betrayed, ashamed, and horribly embarrassed. I'm happy to say, though, that after time and great-grandchildren, things have greatly improved, and my family now accepts and loves my partner and our children with open arms, at least in private. I had only unpacked my identity in a very limited way for my family. I allowed them to only see the pieces of me that I thought they could handle. They only saw the proper, amenable, well-mannered side of me. And it could be argued that if they had dug just a smidge deeper, and quite possibly if I had felt just a little safer, the other sides of my life would have shown through, and they would have found another side of me, this other aspect of my life that makes me uniquely who I am. Once they were allowed to see the parts of my life that identify me as a lesbian, all other accomplishments and identities were lost in the glaring background of my difference. Gone were all the accomplishments in theater. Gone were the hundreds of volunteer hours that earned me scholarship to college. Gone was my identity as the beloved granddaughter. All were replaced with an otherness, an inability to see me as a whole person. On New Year's Eve 2000, I came out to my former roommate from college, and for the next year, she would introduce me by saying, "This is my lesbian friend, Amanda." And I could never decide if that pronouncement was a badge of honor or a tidy warning label. Now, believing that fair is fair, I ventured to introduce her by saying, "This is my Jewish friend, Gase." She wasn't amused. I'm sure you see my point here. Even though she had known me for years prior to my coming out, by labeling me, she created a social shorthand, boxing me up neatly to give social cues to the rest of the world. She had also unintentionally stripped me of all my other identities. I'm confident there's not one person sitting here today who is one-dimensional. We have all spent our lives trying on new identities, casting off those which we outgrow and evolving into who we are today, in this moment, in this space. What I've shared for you this morning is just a small, small piece of my story, a snapshot of a lifetime. My identities have shaped me, have hindered me at times, and they've compelled me to become a beyond categorical thinking facilitator. My experiences with identity consistently reaffirm my belief that it is essential to hear each other's stories and to understand each other's truths, to meet people where they are, lest we fall in the trap of boxing them up for our comfort. That Saturday morning, as I buckled her in her car seat, Adeline spoke for the first time since I had hurriedly redirected the cashier's attention. "I have two mommies," she said in a near whisper. And as I looked at those sapphire blue eyes that mirror my own, I couldn't help but feel the tears well up. I shook my head in affirmation, afraid my voice would betray me, and laid my forehead to hers in our shared gesture of affection since her birth. "My mommies love me very much." She said it with the assured confidence of one who will never be swayed. "Yes," I said, "very much." And there it was, from the mouth and the heart of a child demanding to be acknowledged for her story, for her identity separate from my own, I was once again reminded that the work never ends. The boxes that we pull behind us, the boxes we struggle to break out of, the boxes where we seek refuge must never be allowed to be the sole measure of our identity. I can promise you, there is simply not a box big enough to contain our messy lives and our ever-changing identities. Yesterday, we asked many of you to look in those boxes, to dig deep into the dark and scary places, to stretch, possibly bust a few seams here and there. And today, I will ask you to continue that conversation. My prayer is that you will witness the transformative power of really knowing someone beyond labels, beyond categories, and most certainly beyond boxes. Amen. Blessed be. Shalom.